The mission of AFA is to inform, equip, and activate individuals and families to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church here and abroad in its task of fulfilling the Great Commission. AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. Today is Tuesday, June the 16th, 2026. I'm Tim Wildman, as the announcer just told you, and Ed Vitagliano's in studio. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Hello, Tim.
You're a brother, too. And we are here to, what are we here to do, Ed? What's our role here?
Our role here at Today's Issues is to bring enlightenment and encouragement
and hope
to a world without it simply by talking about what's happening.
You know, you've inspired me just with those words here. I want to go 3 hours.
I don't think I've got that much enlightenment in me.
Hey, before we jump into the news of the day, and there's a plenty. There is a plenty. Wesley and Walker are going to be going to Boston coming up in September, right?
That's right. We're going to go park the car and have a yard, walk around, go to a few Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, they got the Dunkin' Donuts. I've been up there.
That's where it originated. It was the New England area. I can remember my grandparents coming up to visit when we had moved to Nashua, New Hampshire, and they'd come up to visit from the Boston area and bring boxes of Dunkin' Donuts. And I remember the first time Dunkin' Donuts had donut holes.
Really?
Where you could eat. They brought a bag of those. And for some reason, I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Well, I think that is a life memory. I think all of us remember when we first discovered donut holes. Huh? It's just it's a time in your life when you... usually a childhood experience.
I cherish it.
You cherish it.
I cherish it. No, we're going for something more serious.
Okay, so you guys are going for the history tour.
Yes.
With Stephen McDowell, the Providence Foundation. We did this last year. It's going to be a wonderful time. The reason I bring it up is there's only a few seats left.
Yeah.
And it's in September. So, you got July, August, 3 months from now.
Right.
And you guys are going, and it's your hometown, your old stomping ground. And so I wanted people to be aware of this. So if they want to look at the itinerary and everything about the tour, where can they go?
Well, they go to tours.afa.net.
Yeah.
Tours.afa.net. It's not the only tour there they can look at, but we're talking about the Boston tour. And you can tell, we're going to be going on the Freedom Trail and, the USS Constitution. There's all so much history, Lexington and Concord, so much history in the Boston area. Bunker Hill.
Yeah.
So much that happened there during the Revolutionary War and before and after that. And so Stephen McDowell, I have not been on a tour with him. You have many, many times. He is a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah. Timothy Barton's coming on the tour, too, from
Wall
Builders.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So
and September is a good time of the year to go to the Boston area. It starts to cool off a little bit after Labor Day there, and you might catch some of the foliage turning. Usually that happens more on the October side, but it'll be pretty. Weather will be nice.
Yeah.
And
good food. Did you say pretty or party?
I've lived in Mississippi so long, I might have said purdy. I might have said that.
I don't know how they say purdy in Boston.
And that would be wicked funny if I said purdy.
Purdy. So anyway, check it out. The tours.afa.net, tours.afa.net. That's a few seats remain on the Boston tour in September. If that's something you've always wanted to see, so much rich American history in the Boston area. All right, Fred, what's going on?
I wanted to bring back some lobster.
Lobster?
Well, I can arrange that. You still order your lobster from up there?
From Gloucester.
Oh, yeah.
I've
been to Gloucester.
I have, too.
Many times.
Yeah. I've been there.
And I'm going to try to talk Wesley and Walker. Maybe we can go catch a Red Sox game or something at historic Fenway Park. We'll see.
They're in town.
Yeah.
I saw that. You know, Fenway Park dates back to the Revolutionary War. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, the Green Monster, a lot of people don't know that, colonial soldiers stood upon that green wall and fired down upon the British.
First shot. Or was that in Concord? Alice and I went up there for our 40th anniversary.
Yeah, last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years.
And we just said, hey, let's go to Boston. We had never been. And we went to Gloucester, mm-hmm. you're talking about, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful little seaside village.
Fishing village, yeah.
Gorgeous.
Fishing village.
On the coast.
And we drove all around. And we also went to Fenway Park, which I had, as a baseball fan, had always wanted to go to. It's the oldest baseball park in America. And it's just, so baseball fans, you know, the history there, the nostalgia is just unparalleled. Followed maybe by Wrigley Field in Chicago. Right. I think that's the second oldest. And that's also a place I want to go. I've never been. I'd love to go there sometime. The ivy on the walls there, Wrigley Field. But seeing Fenway Park and the Green Monster, everything live, it's just like, wow, I'm really here.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty amazing.
I've never been to Fenway.
Yeah.
My dad, bless his heart, I used to tease him because when we lived up there, I would always say, you know, Dad, will you take me to Fenway? Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. You know, like people in New York City never going to see the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And then the family moved off. My dad moved the family to New Mexico, and we never got a chance. I would tease him for years and years.
Right.
Even when he was sick, I would tease. No, I didn't. I didn't do that. But I'd say, remember, you never took me to Fenway. Yeah, I know that.
All right, Fred, what's happening? We got big news, right?
Yeah, we do. Yesterday, we talked about the big event at the White House on Sunday night, the UFC Freedom 250 event. Thousands of people were there. Well, what we're finding out this morning is that the FBI and the Secret Service found out about a plot, nothing less than a terrorist plot, which could have cost the lives of hundreds of people. Basically, the story is this. There were people that the FBI found out that were planning a terrorist attack that basically involved drones flying into the area around this event, dropping bombs. And then in the excitement, they knew people would flee to the nearest exit, and the plan called for snipers to be outside and start killing people, shooting at people as they left. Now, what the FBI is saying this morning is that at least 5 people already are in custody, and as many as 23 probably by the time this is done. Dan Bongino, the former FBI deputy director, was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about this. Cut number 1.
Well, notice the class warfare language amongst the plotters there that appears in this early stage to point to some type of motive. You know, that just again speaks to the unbelievably charged political rhetoric in the country and this, you know, demonization of people by either their politics or their wealth or their success. So that was disturbing. A couple other things, I've been mourning about this. Just not future threat of drones, the now threat of drone. This technology is evolving on probably weekly, if not monthly, cycles now. It's cheap. It's very difficult to defeat. So you see the use of that as well. And then I'd point out as well what appears to have been a planning in a second wave attack. This has bothered me for a long time, not just the first wave. You know, you see them when you look back to the the Malcolm X shooting, you get the distraction event, and then you get the secondary event. Well, when you do that with heavy weapons and drones, you know, the casualties would be unimaginable if something like this weren't disrupted.
Yeah, according to reports that we're seeing this morning, one suspect apparently has told investigators the goal was to target, quote, capitalist elites, billionaires, or politicians who received donations from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. So that's what one of the suspects. Now, Jonathan Turley, who's a legal analyst with Fox News, says Biden's open borders likely let in scores of terrorists intent on these kind of events. Cut two.
This is really a cautionary tale. The fact is that the government is not the only party preparing for the July 4th celebrations. There are terrorist organizations that are drawn to the same events. This was a well set out pattern of events to maximize casualties. And we have to keep in mind that under the Biden administration, millions of unvetted people were released into this country. It would be a very dangerous delusion to believe that these terrorist organizations and countries did not use that open border to bring people inside.
Now, we're going to get a lot more information when the initial five start appearing in court, which could be later today or tomorrow.
Well, this is terrifying. It really is. You know, these drones, I've seen videos from folks who deal with military overseas and this scenario and that scenario. The fact is, if you can get drones into this country, say in an 18-wheeler, because we don't search most of the vehicles coming in from Mexico or Canada, you could, and there are these types of trucks where the top can open up and these drones can be released. You can park them on a street next to, you know, Congress, or and then you can control those. And listen, tip of the hat to the FBI for sniffing this thing out. This could have been, and I wasn't even thinking about the July 4th celebrations. There'll be celebrations all over the country on our 250th birthday for the nation. As Jonathan Turley was talking about, this 4-year open border policy on the part of the Biden administration. We've talked about this, a couple of these quotes from Bongino and Turley here. This we may rue the day. We all regret it if you're conservative, but we may rue the day when that border was left wide open by the Biden administration, because, as Jonathan Turley said, or Bongino, I don't remember which one it was, you know, the people who hate America would take that opportunity to come across. This is a terrifying foretaste of what could happen in this country. And thank the Lord the FBI was on the
news. No, exactly. You know, when this was first announced that President Trump was going to do this for his 80th birthday, hold this event on the south lawn of the White House, that's the kind of the first thing that popped in my mind. This gives people a lot of months to plan ahead who want to do bad things, you know, in a place that would get worldwide attention. However, on the other hand, you think, you know what, you can't live in fear all the time, and you can't stop doing anything and everything just because something bad might happen. Obviously, there are risks that are too great to take, that I'm sure the Secret Service says to the president, no, we can't do that, especially in light of assassination attempts.
Yeah.
But you know, what place is more secure than the White House in the United States? I mean, so I'm just, as you guys are, I'm a very relieved to hear that the FBI, thank God for the FBI, doing, you know, they were, I don't know how they learned of this. They have their ways, and then they stopped it from ever occurring. And so we don't have to be reporting today about how many have died, you know, attending an event at the White House.
What an evil plot, too. I mean, to frighten people with the explosions, the initial explosions.
Yeah.
And then have snipers target innocent people as they're fleeing.
That's how that's how these professional terrorist organizations work, though. They wait and release a secondary bomb when the first responders come. In Israel, in Israel they've done that before in the past.
Well, so. And people and criminals have done that in this country where they'll phone in a domestic violence report so that the cops show up and they open fire on on the cops.
Right.
So, listen, the fact of the matter is where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
And if you want to hurt people and kill people, that frequently there are ways to get that done.
But this new era we live in of drones is a game changer for good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing what, you know, that's the way that the Ukrainians have been able to fight back against the Russians is using drones. The way that the Iranians were, did I say Iranians? Did I say Russians? Ukrainians.
Ukrainians, right.
Ukrainians and the Iranians, they were fighting, they were using drones. Remember all the drones they sent over to Israel?
Yep.
And then they were using drones, you know, in their warfare against the United States forces, too, recently. So drones have changed everything, and they say that they're cheap. I don't know what that means exactly.
Well, I think it's in comparison to the missiles that are used to shoot them down.
You know what? One day soon, I predict there's going to be an invention of some kind of a shield over places like... You know how you have a invisible wire? I call it a wire to keep dogs from going in the street.
Uh-huh.
You heard of this?
Sure.
What do you call those things?
You're just talking about the electric fence.
Those things.
Yeah.
They're gonna invent something like that to protect places.
They already have. The military already has the various, you know, like EMP devices that could be deployed that would. It would detonate, but it wouldn't be an explosive like we think, but it would send out an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, that would fry a large number of drones coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how deployed that is, but like in warfare, you're going to have measure and countermeasure.
Right.
So we already have in development or maybe deployed anti-drone drones. You know, have you seen videos? I've seen some videos of soldiers, Russians, I think for the most part, individual soldiers who are out in the field trying to escape a drone that some guy's sitting in a bunker somewhere.
Right.
And they try shooting it, but you can move those drones so they're very difficult to hit. And then they almost always get their man. But you're going to have... Measure and countermeasure. The Russians tried to counter the drones that were taking out tanks by putting some sort of a cage on top of it so that the drone would detonate at the cage and not harm the tank. But to your point, it is a game changer because anybody who can get their hands on these relatively cheap drones can do damage against a nation that has far superior technology.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Fred here. Fred, what's next?
Well, the chatter continues with regards to that the memorandum of understanding. Lots of talk, but of course, the details were told.
Do you understand the memorandum, Fred?
Do I understand?
You understand the memorandum? Because it's a memorandum of understanding.
That's right.
Yes.
But I haven't seen it.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a memorandum of understanding between the U.S. and Iran.
Yes.
The rest of us are on the outside.
Yes.
Trying to pick up some information.
But we're into a high level of speculation. Everybody is talking about it. Now, some details are out there with regards to... Iran, one of the things being talked about, Iran gets about $300 billion along the way if they're good boys. You know, they stop developing uranium, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some people are saying, wow, this sounds a little bit like the Barack Obama deal that, you know, we're going to be sending pallets of cash if the Iranians are good. However, J.D. Vance was on Fox and Friends this morning. And this is what he had to say about this idea that U.S. tax dollars are going to go to Iran. Cut number four.
They never get a dime of American taxpayer money, ever. Full stop, not even close. Okay. What we have said is there's a lot of economic benefit in the United States relieving a lot of sanctions and welcoming them back into the world economy. There's a lot of benefit there, not American money, but there's a lot of economic prosperity that can flow from that.
All right, so there you have it. And J.D. Vance was on the negotiating team for this. So he appears to be saying and refuting these reports that we're going to send checks to Iran if they're good, as far as not developing uranium. Now, the other aspect that's being talked about a whole lot is Israel was not at the table for these negotiations. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is in Israel trying to reassure the Israeli people that, okay, this is a deal between Iran and the United States. Israel, he says, will continue and has the right to continue to defend itself against, for instance, Hezbollah, which is buried in Lebanon. And if Hezbollah starts misbehaving again, sending missiles, that Israel will respond. This is what Netanyahu had to say through a translator, cut number 12.
We saved the state of Israel from annihilation. But I tell you, citizens of Israel, the struggle is not over. We will have to continue standing guard, continue being strong and determined to defend ourselves as necessary.
There is a Middle East expert. Her name is Konda Ahmed. She is with the Independent Women's Forum. And basically, she said this is bad for the U.S. and it's bad for Israel. Cut number 10.
This is really a deal to begin negotiating a deal. It seems that Iran is winning a lot of reprieve. There's no consequences for Iran's actions. There's no limitation on its sponsorship of proxies. For instance, Hezbollah is unscathed, and it seems like the ceasefire is going to include Hezbollah, which is at great expense to the state of Israel. It also is only agreeing to consider arresting its efforts with its uranium, which it already has, to the tune of hundreds of kilograms, very highly enriched. There's no mention of plutonium, which is another route to nuclear weapons, which is a huge omission. And so this is actually a victory for Qatar and Pakistan, the negotiators, and the Iranian regime. And it looks like a mechanism just to open the Strait of Hormuz immediately without solving so many of the hostilities on the ground.
So once again,
who is that now? Do you know?
Yes. Her name is Konda Ahmed. She is with the she's the Middle East expert with the Independent Women's Forum.
Well, one of the aspects of this whole thing that I've been most upset about is the treatment of Israel by President Trump.
Amen.
and his what we know now is Israel was not. Listen, I do agree that the United States has to negotiate and has to act in its own best interest around the world, period, okay? That has to be first and foremost whoever the president of the United States is. However, with respect to Israel, they've been our number one ally in the world for a long, long time. We've been very good friends. And President Trump has had a good relationship with Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. However, this situation with Iran has caused Trump to be on edge, I guess you could say. I don't know exactly. He wants to leave Israel out of the negotiations. By the same token, I should say, he wants to tell Israel what they can and can't do. Uh-huh. You see what I'm saying? So that's what's disappointing. He's also basically called Benjamin Netanyahu an idiot, pretty much, with his obscene language that he's used publicly about Benjamin Netanyahu. And that puts Benjamin Netanyahu in a sort of a predicament, because he can't come out and lash back at the President of the United States, because Israel does depend on aid from the United States, and they do want to continue to have a good relationship. And we all know with President Trump, you know, if you get on his bad side, I don't care who you are, he'll kick you off the bus. I don't know if he'll throw you under the bus, but he'll kick you under the he'll kick you out the bus. Anyway, we'll talk with Jenna Ellis when we get back from the break. Stay with us.
We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com/AFR.
America's 250th birthday. It's a great excuse to have some extra cake and ice cream, but we can help your celebration go well beyond that. Show your patriotism with America 250 apparel that will become a memento of this special year. We also have special episodes on AFA Stream to help underscore that America is a Christian nation and help you find God in the Constitution. Find all of this and more in one place. AFA.net/topics/250.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We are going to Italy in March of 2027. We're also going to Greece in March of 2027. And we're doing those tours back-to-back if you want to do both of them. In Italy, we'll be going to Venice. We'll ride the gondola and see all the sights there. And we'll go to Pisa and walk on the Leaning Tower of. If you fall off, we're not responsible. Also, we're going to Rome and see the Sistine Chapel and the Colosseum and all the catacombs. We'll see all the sights of Rome. And in Greece, it's the Footsteps of Paul trip. So the places where Paul went in the Bible mentioned in Greece. If you want information on any of these tours, go to tours.afa.net. Tours.afa.net. Tours.afa.net.
You, Lord, are my lamp. The Lord turns my darkness into light. Psalm 18:28.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR, Tim, Ed, and Fred. And again, as always, we appreciate you tuning in to be with us here. Well, Jenna Ellis is with us. Jenna is host of the Jenna Ellis in the Morning radio show right here on AFR, 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time, weekdays, and the on-demand podcast, which we host at AFR.net, AFR.net. The on-demand podcast with Jenna is a show that's weekly. So you download her podcast, and she always has great guests on, good topics to be informed about as a Christian in America today. And Jenna joins us from Florida. How you doing, Jenna?
Yes, it is really hot in Florida. I was just telling Brent during the break that I'm going to actually be in Colorado next week visiting my parents, and it's 72 there and no humidity, and I'm very excited about it. So
yeah.
I get to have much better winters here because I don't have to dig my car out of snow, but the summers there are beautiful.
That's why snowbirds go south for the winter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they turn around and go northbound for the summertime to escape, as Jenna said, the heat and the humidity. Jenna, you got an article that appeared in the Christian Post. This is Pride Month, Jenna. Aren't you getting into the spirit?
You know, pride is still one of the seven deadly sins, so I think it's always so ironic that people are wanting to celebrate one of the most prolific and well-known sins, and it just goes to show that there are so many ways that people who are intent on rejecting God will intentionally and just boldly express that.
It's actually not all that ironic, the fact that they have, you know, fallen prey to the kind of sexual immorality we're talking about, then to turn around and celebrate pride. These things kind of go together. Thinking about Romans chapter 1, where it does talk about homosexuality, but it ends up with this list of all kinds of sins, and it says that not only do they practice it, but they encourage other people to do it. And that seems to be exactly what June Pride Month is all about, applauding others and encouraging them to sin.
Yes. And, you know, my pastor this past Sunday was preaching out of Romans 8 and, of course, ties that into Romans 1 and the whole, you know, narrative of the Romans Road as Paul describes it. And one of the things that he was talking about that I hadn't quite framed this way before that I thought was really well preached is that God doesn't send people to hell for their sin. I mean, that's what when we as Christians object to Pride Month and we say, you know, you need to repent for your sins, all of these things, you know, otherwise, if you don't come into the saving knowledge of Christ, then you will be apart from him for eternity and in a literal place that's called hell or Hades. And when those people say, well, you know, you're just being so mean, and how could a loving God send people to hell? My pastor was saying, no, these people who are so intent on living totally separate from God in this life, why should God say, okay, I'm going to demand that you stay with me forever in the next one? I mean, they send themselves there, and God says, okay, you don't want to live with me and acknowledge me and accept me as and acknowledge me as Lord in this life, and then I'm going to give you what you want, which is total separation from him and from everything good in eternity.
You know, by the way, we did mention this article that you wrote. The title is Happy Obsessed Pride Month Versus the Goodness of God. It did first appear in the Christian Post, but is now available, folks, for you to read at AFN.net, AFN.net. You can read this article. You know, one of the things you pointed out here, and then, Fred, I'll let you speak a little bit.
I'm here, too.
And you're here. And I mean, either of you guys can jump in.
I just was reminding you.
Yeah. you said, it's very well written, by the way. Excellent job. But you say in here, I'm just going to read this a little bit, but I think people will appreciate the sentiments, even though I'm reading it. You say the Christian worldview is not hostile to pleasure or hostile to pleasure. In fact, Christianity is the only worldview that can truly explain why pleasure exists at all. God created a world overflowing with beauty and good things to enjoy. He could have made a universe in shades of gray, yet he painted sunsets across the sky. He could have made food merely functional, yet he filled creation with rich flavors, aromas, and textures. He created music, laughter, friendship, romance, adventure, and the breathtaking wonder of nature. And most tellingly of all, he made humans with the capacity to appreciate and enjoy his creation. I just thought that was just so insightful, because one of the accusations against Christians is you're just a bunch of, you know, buzzkills. But God created the ability to enjoy pleasure, but has to be in the confines of what he determines is holy and good, right?
Yeah, and the fact that everything that we do enjoy within the boundaries of the laws of nature and of nature is God, then point us back to our ultimate purpose, which is to worship him. And so instead, what Pride Month is doing is worshiping the created and trying to find meaning and ultimate satisfaction merely in pleasure itself and in all of the perversions of the ways that God did not create us to enjoy the things that are here on earth. And of course, we know that we live in a sinful and fallen world, but we still have the glimpse of the majesty of God. I mean, Psalms tells us the heavens proclaim the majesty of the Lord and the goodness of the Lord. And so as we enjoy what he has created, we ultimately then, as Christians, we are turned to worship him. I mean, when I'm out walking my dogs during the Florida sunset, the other night, it was just spectacular. I mean, you literally had pink and lavender clouds and just, you know, this beautiful sunset. And instead of thinking, you know, wow, look at Mother Nature, right, I'm saying, look at the majesty of the Lord that not only created that, but gave me as a human being the capacity to see that, to appreciate it, and then ultimately to worship him. And so that's the contrast with Pride Month, is that they are trying to find satisfaction in pleasure and beauty itself, instead of turning those things toward worship of the God who created and gave us every good thing to enjoy.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're talking about Pride Month. You know, maybe you've seen it out there. It's a celebration of
pretty much everywhere, in a lot of blue yeah. states and blue cities.
Yeah, being
especially.
A little bit sarcastic here, which is rare for me, and that in itself is sarcastic, right, Ed? So, you know, listen, I think the American public basically has been oversaturated with this now for years and years. We get it. Okay, you're proud to be an LGBT person, but how much pride do you need? Come right. on, come on. Uh-huh. Good night.
And everybody else applauding.
Well, here's what I think a lot of people object to, who say, you know, if that's the lifestyle you choose, then it's against the will of God, but that's the direction you've chosen to go, and you're a free agent adult. I think most people, a lot of people view it like that. However, what people object to is being force-fed this stuff day and night, and especially when it relates to compulsive, like in your job, okay? You're going to have to come to this training, okay, class, so that you can be sensitized to the LGBTQ movement, and we don't care that you're religious, you know, beliefs object to that. They know you're going to have to sit there, because otherwise you're a hater. That's the part that people object to, I think, is if you don't clap and applaud the LGBT community and the movement, then you are de facto a hater and a bigot, and you're going to have to explain yourself if you can, or otherwise you'll be fired. That's the kind of thing. You want somebody who is going to get the Bold Christian of the Year award? I was reading this story. Okay, in San Francisco, of course, the Major League Baseball team is the Giants. They've been there a long time. They hosted Pride Night. Imagine that, in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
They hosted Pride Night with the team wearing hats with a rainbow-colored Giants logo. Now, just as an aside, I think the LGBT movement needs to get their own symbol, because they're stealing that from the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rainbow.
Intentionally.
Okay, so go out and create your own symbol. Anyone will take the rainbow away from the biblical story, which is where it originated. But I digress. This says, several Giants pitchers, I'm reading from the Fox News story, in a statement of their faith, wrote Bible verse designations on their hats. This is for Pride Night in San Francisco. One starting pitcher, Landon Roop, addressed his reasoning after the game, saying that the verse is about representing God's covenant, which is the story of the rainbow, right? It's what the rainbow's about. He said, quote, "It's just about God's covenant and a promise that he makes to us that, you know, his faithfulness and his mercy," Roop said to reporters. "That's just kind of something I believe in, and I stand firm in that, and I'm thankful we live in a country where, you know, we have the freedom to believe what we want and express what we want." He went on to say, "There is no hate at all. It's just what I stand for and what I stand in. I believe in God," he added. So there were some other professional pitchers professional baseball players that have done similar things. Jenna, that's pretty, especially in San Francisco, mm-hmm. for a guy to stand up for the Lord in that way. Fred, any great comments on this?
Just the story you've been talking about. You can also find that at AFN.net.
Okay, wonderful.
Giants starting pitcher honors God's covenant in gay Mecca. So, look for that on AFN.net.
Gay Mecca. That's kind of funny right there. If you know what Islam teaches about homosexuality.
The importance of Mecca to Islam.
Yeah. Yes. You know, speaking of rainbow, I was just thinking, last Friday evening, we had a storm system that went through our area. And I was just driving in our driveway, and across the whole eastern sky was the most distinct rainbow I have seen in years.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible. And I got to thinking, you know, this group of people stole that symbol, but what it stands for. And God still reminds us of who he is and what he can do. In fact, it was a double rainbow, which you don't often get to see.
Now, what's a double rainbow?
Two arcs.
It's, oh, wow.
Two arcs, yeah.
Double means two. I'm just trying to be helpful.
You're just trying to be helpful in a sarcastic way.
No, how do you say that without sounding like you're sarcastic?
Well, what I'm trying to say is,
I saw a brother struggling.
If it's overlaid one over another, okay, how would you know that it was two? I don't know whether they were crisscrossed over the sky. You see what I'm saying?
You're
not buying it.
No, I'm sort of.
Yeah. I'm just shocked you've never seen a double rainbow.
I have not. I've never.
Wow.
In fact, I'm gonna Google it as we speak.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jenna. Well, what you got coming up on your show tomorrow?
Yes. So we have the great Steve Dace tomorrow is going to.
So you don't have to talk.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I sit there with my coffee and,
Steve
Parrish,
can go now.
Who writes for AFN.
Yeah.
He's so great because he'll text me and he'll be like, oh, I see that Steve is filling in for you today. it's great. But one of the topics that we're going to cover, he did an extensive review of this new Spielberg movie, Disclosure Day.
Yeah, he did. I read his review.
And the basic synopsis, of course, is, you know, if alien life exists and people are saying, you know, oh, this would destroy the premise of Christianity. And I've covered this in articles actually at AFN.net, which listeners, but I digressed him. But listeners should definitely go to AFN because we cover all of these topics. And the news that you really need to know from a biblical worldview is there. And one of the opinion pieces that I wrote a while ago was talking about how even if some other kind of sentient being is outside of the terrestrial Earth's atmosphere, that doesn't do anything to change the truth of the gospel of Christ that's given specifically to human beings, who are the only creatures and creation that's made in the image of God. And so, you know, we don't have to be concerned that, you know, Spielberg is doing E.T. or Disclosure Day or anything else. So we're going to talk about that. And then also Thursday, I'm very excited, I have the Attorney General of Missouri coming on to talk about some of the financial investments that China is still trying to make in the United States. We've been talking about Iran for quite a bit, but we also still need to be paying attention to what China is doing. So a lot coming up this week.
All right, Jenna, thanks so much for being on with us. We hope you have a wonderful hot and humid day there in
Florida. To stay cool in Florida. By the way, Jenna, I'm looking at images of the double rainbow. That's amazing. Really cool. Have you seen one of these? I've never seen that.
Florida and Colorado, actually. And it's incredible.
Oh,
and you know what? I was reminded.
Yeah. Everywhere you go, there's a double rainbow.
But I was reminded as we're talking about this symbol, and God still clearly displays his covenant, that we somehow don't, like, there are some Christians that don't believe that his covenant toward Israel is still existing. And so, you know, that's such a theological cognitive dissonance, but that's for another show. But anyway, the rainbow reminded me of that.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, great article. Yeah. Folks, check it out at AFN.net. Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you, Jenna. Guys.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Jenna Ellis joining us from her home in Central Florida. You are listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred here this hour. So to the double rainbow, yeah, you saw.
Last Friday evening was absolutely spectacular. In fact, I called my, she was out shopping, my wife says, I said, you got to get out of the store and see this thing. My neighbor just came home. I said, look at this. This is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And it stretched as far as the eye could see across that eastern sky. And it, what got me too was the colors were so distinct.
Yeah.
You don't often see that.
And unfortunately, your wife, you know, Susie, did as you said and had a run-in with the law because she left the store without paying it so she could see.
Oh, yeah, I should have reminded her that.
You better pay before you leave. No, that's gorgeous. I've never seen one of those. I look forward to it.
The day you see a double rainbow?
The day I see a double rainbow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I'll put you on speed dial.
Yes. Yeah, please do. I'll leave wherever I'm at.
You know, I think double rainbows over Tupelo is a good line for like a song.
Double rainbows over Tupelo.
What do you think?
I like that.
I'm onto something, I think, right there. I'll see what I can do with that.
Somehow, though, we have Elvis impersonators in our town.
Yeah.
An Elvis sounding double rainbow.
We don't need another one. Tim, I just pick your own style if you're going to do that.
I was going to go Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond?
I was going to be a Neil Diamond impersonator. What do you think?
Well, go ahead. Try it.
I don't want to show off right here on live national radio. I was thinking, you know, maybe when I...
Double rainbows over Tupelo. You might have something there.
Okay. All right. Fred, go ahead.
All right.
Sweet Caroline.
There's a big question in political circles right now. And it kind of goes like this. How far will they go? And the they is the Democratic Party. There are polls. Tim, you sent out a story overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Polling within the Democratic Party, and even to a certain extent outside, the people are loving AOC. And they're loving Gavin Newsom, and they want to, there seems to be a race to the left, and we're actually seeing it today. There's a Democrat primary in Washington, D.C. for the mayor's position there. And you've got two people who are racing to the left who want to be the next mayor of Washington, D.C. Byron York, who is a Fox News contributor, was talking about this morning, cut number 15.
I think this is something we've seen in some one-party jurisdictions of late. So among Democrats, the fight is between the left and the far left. And what you're seeing now is Janice Lewis-George, whose idea of affordability is more rent control, who advocates taxpayer-paid, quote, free child care, leading in this race to support Mayor Muriel Bowser, who seems kind of centrist in all this. And the candidate who most resembles Mayor Bowser to continue what she has done, Kenyon McDuffie, is actually behind. So we're seeing this kind of fight among Democrats, and that's all it is in the District of Columbia.
Where is Marion Barry when you need him? Huh? Where have you gone, Marion Barry? A lonely city turns its eyes to you.
It turns its lonely eyes to you. Searching for a double rainbow.
He would be a rabid conservative by today's Democrat Party standards. The further that the Democrats go to the left, I think it hurts them with the middle. Not in a city like Washington, D.C., not in the big cities. They don't know the endless leftward bounds they can go to. I mean, you look at what the people in the mayor in Boston and Chicago and
Seattle.
I mean, these people are way out there to the left. New York.
Yeah.
And that's where the Democrats are going at the big city level. And I don't know if that would help or hurt. I think it would hurt them, you know, in middle America, especially when it comes to the presidential race. But
well, here's something that we have been paying attention to this. I'm just saying going forward, I it's generations now, maybe two generations, three, I don't know, probably two. I don't want to over exaggerate this, But in public schools, increasingly, certainly on colleges and university campuses, you've had leftists, cultural Marxists in charge who have been running down our country for decades, teaching young people that our country's founding were a bunch of racists. Our country is, you know, infected with systemic racism. So you try to destroy confidence in the founding of the nation. And then when you have a period of time like we are currently in, with economic dislocation, with the American dream increasingly appearing to slip away from younger people, where they think, I'm never going to be able to own a home, AI is going to take my job, they become very dissatisfied. You've already told them that what we have is morally bankrupt. You create a scenario in which they are willing to toss out the Constitution, or at least constitutional ideals, to try something new. And I think increasingly that's what's happening. It is starting in our big cities, the blue cities and the blue states. I am not discounting the possibility that this is going to be, I'm not discounting the possibility that Marxism and socialism is not going to become the wave of the future for the Democratic Party. And who knows where that's going to wind up taking us. It's very sad, but I think it was done intentionally by people who were Marxists to begin with, and they said, well, this is a long haul. We're going to erode the foundations of this country.
What about a Gavin Newsom AOC ticket?
That would be formidable.
Yeah. New York. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.